show the value of its citizens, its heritage, and what it means. It's been my privilege to search Madison County history some, and I know that when the Memphis and Charleston Railroad was built through here, many of your citizens gave the right-of-way, and some of your citizens gave cross ties, and some of your citizens even allowed their servants to work on the railroad to make sure it came through Madison. And around the railroad, of course, station grew up a community supported by a rich hinterland, and it was from your station that cotton was shipped. In fact, you know, you competed so successfully with Triana that you let it go by the board after the Civil War. A long period of time it has been resurrected, but Triana was to be the great port on the Tennessee River, and we were to have a canal beginning at the Big Spring and extending right down to Triana. But as soon as the Memphis and Charleston Railroad came through here in the 1850s, then the commercial area shifted to Madison, and here you shipped cotton on the Memphis and Charleston Railroad. You realize that you're right in the middle of some of the best land in all of Alabama. In fact, the soil gauges show that the topsoil of Decatur Dewey Loam is somewhere between 24 inches and 24 feet deep, which says that cotton grew with very little need for fertilizer. And so you will find that through the years your community has continued to grow and develop as a cultural center as well as a economic center. And it's good to see it blossoming into a city. And we always want to remember, though, that it is not just in the physical and economic things that make a difference, but in the quality of life in the community. And Huntsville, you will remember, expanded in all directions in the 1950s. And in looking over one of the plans for expansion in Huntsville, we found that they perhaps intended to four-lane most of the residential streets leading south. And that's when some of us took stand. We said that to four-lane these streets and cut down the trees and rush traffic through, for instance, Madison and Franklin and Adams and McClung and California, and to four-lane Lincoln, and might endanger the residential area of Huntsville that had some of the early homes, some of the earliest homes, still standing in the whole state of Alabama. And to this end, we made a survey of the historical part of town, and we brought the properties manager from the National Trust down to help us establish limits. Now, this was before we had any real help like you have from the Historic Commission, and I feel sure you have already brought them into defining the boundaries of your district. We adopted a philosophy which I think is valid. One, we tried to get natural boundaries insofar as possible. We decided they wouldn't move Maple Hill Cemetery, and that we wouldn't, that Fagan's Spring Branch would not change its course. And we then tried to bring it over to the old town limits of Huntsville, but that was impossible. And so we agreed then on Franklin Street, both sides of Franklin Street. And we moved to think we would encompass the downtown square, but we met with opposition there, so we narrowed the scope of the Twickenham district and moved it on over to Randolph. And our, instead of determining that we should have just certain types of architecture, though we did make a survey of the most historic homes in Huntsville, and we made a list first of all of the antebellum homes, those that had been built before the Civil War, and we determined the streets on which these buildings were located. And then we evolved into a broader philosophy, and that was that all architecture, no matter when it was built in that area, was significant, because what it showed was the changes in architectural concepts through the years. And so we very carefully defined the Twickenham Historic Proposed District to include all the architecture in the area, that it would be a museum which showed the evolution of architecture of Huntsville, and that it was just as important to have a modern home in the district as it was to have an 1814 home, which we have in the district. And so we moved then to make a survey of all the homes in the area which we defined. And this took a considerable amount of time, and we identified all the property owners. We decided that we would not interfere with zoning, that this was a protection for residential sections, but also for commercial sections, and that we would not interfere with zoning. But we would place certain rules and regulations concerning within the district to preserve the nature, the historical nature of the district. And so the next step then was to do what you all have done. We created the Twickenham Historic Preservation District Association. Too long. So we just call it by its initials. But anyway, we created this association, and we approached, just as you did, our local delegation to Montgomery. And we ran into some difficulty because at this point, some of the people that we least expected decided that their property might have a large commercial value and that they'd rather sell it and forget the old homes and make a whole lot of money. This is one of the considerations you're going to run into as to what is the historical value and the real estate value in relationship to the use. But we got over that hurdle by waiting 5 years until we got a new delegation to Montgomery. They put an 80% referendum on us. And if you will study the property owners in a historical district, you will find that a good many of them are in the states. And some of them are churches, and you have to get all of the congregation, or the, at least the board trustees, or the, to vote on all of this. And so we decided it would be difficult to get an 80% referendum, so we waited 5 years. But we talked about the Twickenham District, and everybody agreed that it was a district. Then in 1970, and you were very fortunate because you got Tom Butler to get your ordinance all through already. I might also say that the state ordinance before the legislature, which would give local communities an option on developing districts without going back to the legislature with a local bill. But now that you have the bill passed, you all are now ready to take the next step in formalizing your district. Well, as soon as we got the legislation through in 1971, we then took the next step, which was to petition the city of Huntsville to create the historical district. And the city planner, planning department, drew all of the legal boundaries. Have you done that yet? The legal boundaries? You already have the legal boundaries. Then we listed every property owner within the legal boundaries, and we petitioned, and this is one way of voting without having to hold a formal election. We petitioned the city through individual petitions to create the district based on the legislation which was passed in Montgomery, and based on a review of every aspect of Huntsville government that might have some say in it. And the only correction we got from a 51% vote of the property owners was a 60% vote. And the reason they suggested that. Joe Peters was on the city council at the time. He suggested that this was the vote which brought annexation into the city. You have to have a vote of 60% of the property owners. So what we did then was to, I thought I'd brought a petition with me, but I have some that I'll be glad to give you if you all choose this route. Now, you could call a meeting, a vote of the property owners, but you can also get a petition. And what we did, this went to all the property owners located within the proposed Twickenham Historic Preservation District, called public meeting. And we discussed it, and we read all parts of the act, and then we gave out to each property owner in the district a petition which asked the city council to create the ordinance. And we got almost an 80% vote on it, a petition on it. And we bundled all the petitions together and took them to the city council. And this was the letter we wrote then, and along with it we put the petitions, and we wrote the mayor to bring it to the members of the city council. And then following that, which was a majority of the property owners in the district, the city passed an ordinance in 1972 which created the Twickenham Historical District and provided for a commission to supervise the procedures by which changes in the district or construction in the district would be reviewed. And I noticed from reading your ordinance you have just about the same setup for this proposed one that we have. We have representatives of city council, we have city planner, we have the inspection department, and we have then five members from the city, two from Old Town District, and we've created another district after the Twickenham, and from representatives in the district. This commission meets once a month, 4:30, at planning, where the old Chamber of Commerce is, and we invite you to come and see how we work. We've been in operation now about 15 years, and as such, we've gotten some of the procedures well oiled and functioning very well, and we also have some problems too, but so far we have been, I consider, very successful in helping to preserve historic structures and to preserve the more or less the cultural value of it, not only for ourselves, but to share it with those who come to visit with us, just like you do. I've been down here once or twice to your historical days in the fall. I didn't get down last time, but I think this is one of the ways that you call attention to and share one with another and with others what you have to be proud of as a heritage for the city of Madison. Now, once we had gotten the legislation, then the mayor appointed, we have these regular members, the city council and the inspection department and the planning commission, these people are set to be regularly on the commission, and then our other five members from the community. We then created rules and regulations governing the procedures of the commission based on the ordinance. And once we had established the regulations of the Historic Preservation Commission and how we would function, then we proceeded to have a hearing to review this with the people in the district. We invited the whole town of Huntsville to come, and we had a good bit of interest in it. And then after the hearing we adopted this as our rules of procedure, and we use this once a month when we meet. And I noticed in just glancing at your proposed ordinance, you do have, and we have, the procedure from the through the inspection department, if a person wishes to modify his home in the historic district or add to it or change the or build in the historic district, then they submit a proposal through the inspection department at least a week before we meet. This is distributed to the commission, and we proceed to go and investigate and look and read. And I wish to say to you that your commission should have various types of expertise on it. We have a lawyer and a historian and an architect, and then we have the city planner, and the inspection department brings to bear any of the rules and regulations that apply to everybody in the community, and then we then look at what applies to historic preservation. I would like to say that I do think it's better to preserve the whole historical chronology of your town rather than assuming just to preserve just the oldest. Every aspect of what you get ready to preserve is significant. And our philosophy is that we preserve a chronology of historic buildings and sites rather than just a few set in a few years, such as the antebellum. We started out with that, but we got off of that very early because we decided that and the National Register will register anything that's over 50 years old. And all of the sites within the historical district need not necessarily be historic. Some of them are declared as not contributing to historical architecture and site, but nevertheless not being derogatory to it. Now, has the commission made you all a survey yet? Or have you all made a survey of the contents of your district?
Not completely.
Well, I'm sure they will help you with that. Have you brought in the State Historic Commission?
Yes, well, they've been here. I suppose it was an unofficial survey, but they rode through the community with us and had some comments. Mainly, they said that at that time we had quite a few non-conformities that probably wouldn't allow us to go on the National Register right now, but they said with time that most changes.
Well, they're modifying that considerably. I just helped them get the town of Gainesville in the National Register, and they identified all of its non-historical sites, but they did not eliminate it because of those, because the majority of them were worthy of the National Register. Now, let me take it a step further. Once we got the ordinance passed, supported by the property owners, then the commission was set up, then it has functioned like that. Then, on that basis, on the basis of the proposal, we then submitted the historical research necessary to get the district in the National Register. And that took 3 years. But we were one of the very first historical districts, and as such we were guinea pigs, and we kept working and working and working and putting it in terminology. But now they have in the State Historic Commission all of the necessary forms and everything, so that it goes much more rapidly than it would if they hadn't used us as a guinea pig, so to speak. The one other district that had been created that from which we gained a good bit of knowledge was that of Mobile. And I brought along with me tonight, and I'm going to leave you some of this material that I think will be helpful to you. We had a seminar down at Selma not long ago on historic districts, and they gave us a good bit of material. One of them is on Mobile, and I'll share that with you. This is a complete handbook about restoring and maintaining property in Mobile's historical district. They're ahead of us in that, and they're much larger, of course, because Mobile is 450,000 people or thereabouts, but they are right down in the heart of the old district. We did learn some things from them, and we can share what we've learned ourselves. There's such thing as being too restrictive as well as being not restrictive enough. And they have even a color chart down in Mobile. But the trouble of it is, when you put a big, take for instance these primary colors here, they're just fine, but you know what they look like. But samples of paint, if you put that much yellow on something on a big wall, it would show up far different from just a little sample of it. And they got into trouble down in Mobile by having too small a sample. Anyway, I'll share this with you. Now let's see where we are in terms of how we function. We put out a little brochure, which we are now revising, that's a little more explicit. And I think I have enough copies to go around. I made a speech not long ago to the Board of Realtors, and they have a good Xerox machine. So they Xeroxed us about many copies. I let each one of you have one of these tonight if you like. I brought these. They Xeroxed them for us. We, of course, have a budget of only $800 in the city of Huntsville, so we are very careful about what we give out. But I think you all will be interested in these are the guidelines for the Historic District Architectural Review by the Huntsville Historic Preservation Commission. And the association distributes those periodically to the members in the two districts to make sure that they understand that we do require certain things, but we aren't that restricted. You know, what people didn't realize was that most of the things, the regulations that we have are already in place. You all have zoning, and you have inspection department for putting in plumbing and all of that, don't you? So what I'm saying is that most of the regulations are already in place, to put a few more on was really, we had some people who just questioned us severely on whether or not we were putting on one more regulation they didn't want to have to follow. But once they got started on it, I'll tell you a secret. It was not a secret. We didn't realize that when we created the historical districts in Huntsville, we were creating a real estate boom, but we did. And the values of property have been enhanced by the controls. That is a fact. In fact, I know I live in one of those places, and I'm concerned about what my property values are now. Are you? You all are. I guess you all got your notices, didn't you? Well, anyway, let me say that along with it, I have some other guidelines that we got from seminars that will help. Some of you will have got to be on the commission. And you will find that these, I think, will help you over some of the rough spots so that that people won't be afraid to come before you. You know, it never occurred to me that people would be afraid to come before the commission. But they come, they don't anymore, but they used to come shake a little bit. I think they thought we were going to bite them or something. But anyway, they'd come and, but now they come with their plans and explain, and we help them lots of times on things they don't know about. And our architects help them and give them all kinds of free advice that if you'd go to a firm, you'd have to pay for, particularly on the height and width and things like that. Because you can tell whether or not a new building fits in with what's already there. We have some very extremely modern buildings in the Twickenham, but they blend in and no one really objects to them, and it's just one more era of architecture which has been added to the Twickenham. I would point out that here is a do's and don'ts to commission members. And these are things that I think would get people over the fright of coming before a commission. It says, be friendly with all applicants and leave them with a good impression of the local government process. Review each application as a separate case and apply the criteria each time, even when it seems needlessly repetitive. That's the thing we have found to be helpful. And make sure that each motion to approve or deny an application includes that the commissioner is familiar with the building and neighborhood where the changes are proposed. We always We may think we're a little snoopy, but we go look at everything that's going to happen. The changes are in keeping with the character of the building and surrounding area. That's texture, style, placement, and arrangement. The building is significant or is not significant to the district, and why changes are necessary. You know what we found, and if you study the architecture, no matter what era it is, you're going to find that it's over 50 years old, something's been added to it. And most of the time, it's usually in keeping with the rest of the house, or else it's comfortable. And so what you have to do is to more or less be reasonable on what needs to be added, but there are ways to add it so it doesn't look stuck on, so to speak. We tape record all meetings and make accurate minutes, including all reasons for the decisions that are made. And we have developed a system which is important, I think, in that once a review has been made and approval has been given by the commission, then this gives the go-ahead sign to the inspection department to issue a permit, a building permit. And then we have developed a set of approval forms, disapproval forms, the reason for denial or the reasons for acceptance. And we did this after we had done something in good faith and got called into circuit court because we hadn't put it in writing. The letter, interestingly enough, was written to the city council and a copy of it sent to the person because he was going to go and appeal immediately to the city council, which you have a right to do. But unfortunately, the letter was addressed to the council and not to him. If the copy had gone to the council and the address to him, then we'd be in good shape. But the technicality in the courts is very important. So we are well fortified now with all the procedures by which we record our actions. But we've had very little opposition to us, and most people are very appreciative of the suggestions that are made, and lots of times we save people money. Tell what not to do, too. And I'm going to leave you some of these. I think that would be helpful. But here is a chairman's checklist for conducting a meeting, which we have developed that is helpful, I think, in just the routine of things. This is what we always do. And I think this helps to build up the real support and enthusiasm for the historical district. Have a checklist with staff to ensure that the notices are sent out and all applications are promptly advertised and mailed. All applications complete and mailed to members in advance. Check on availability of minutes. Keep an accurate record of. We have, as you do around, on the name of the maps and photographs and slides necessary, and tape recorder and whatever's necessary. And then at the meeting we have an agenda which I think you might find helpful. Here is a guideline which we got from the Alliance of Preservation Commissioners in Georgia. What it means to adopt a preservation ordinance. And I think I'd like to comment very briefly on this, and then I'll be quiet and let you answer. And I'll answer any questions that I can and help you find probably some of the answers that I don't know. But to summarize, I would commend to you that a municipal policy for the protection of historic properties is a real worthy objective. To establish an objective and democratic process for designating historic property. I'm just giving you the steps, and you are to the point right now where you need to involve the property owners and to have a hearing so that everybody who will be involved will understand that it's not necessarily a hard thing to follow through on. To protect the integrity of designated historic properties with a design review requirement. That we have developed over a period of time in Huntsville, and I don't think it's very restrictive. Most people don't find it so. Authorize design guidelines for new development within historic districts to ensure that it is not destructive to the area's historic character. Let me ask you one question here. We had this difficulty in Gainesville. Do you have mobile home parks inside the historic district? Well, this was one of the problems we had in Gainesville, but you have a grandfather clause, but these were designated as non-historic entities, and but they didn't rule us out because of, but they isolated them and drew a line around them and took them out. I just mentioned this, though. This is one of the problems they're having in Gurley with the historical district. I think there are ways of, and what we did in Huntsville, and I suggest this to you, if you get into real opposition, you can always eliminate that property from it. But I don't think you'll have it here in Madison. It stabilizes declining neighborhoods and protects and enhances property values. I think that's a very valid consideration. And you realize, I haven't seen where your historic zone is. Is it by streets?
Yes, ma'am. We have it outlined in the ordinance.
What I would suggest to you is that you're going to include the railroad in that.
Yes,
sir. That. Do you realize that that's a significant, and I think you've done a wonderful job of putting the tank there as a symbol of it, to preserve that railroad track in the middle of it, and that's what you're doing, I gather, is to preserve the reason for Madison being here in the first place, and to pay tribute to the railroad, which is the source of creation of your community. To begin with, I went to Stevens, and that's what Stevenson has done. They have put a museum right in the middle of the railroad track, you know, where the roads cross. And I went up there one day with my local history class, and I said, "We'd like to see the museum. Who do I see?" And this person said, "Well, see the mayor. He'll take you over there." And here came the mayor. Well, and he had the key to the museum. And he took us in and showed us, and they have really developed a wonderful little museum. Because you see, Stevenson was the had railroads that crossed there and became the terminus. You see, that joined on to the Nashville to Chattanooga road, and the Memphis and Charleston joined on and used a mutual track on into Chattanooga. And there is Stevenson, very proud of its heritage as a railroad center. I think there are some other aspects, though, of Madison, besides growing around a railroad station. There's a cultural value here, too, and when you put points of emphasis in historic places, now there sits your Episcopal minister back there. Did you ever find the lot where the church was located here in Madison?
Yeah.
Hmm?
No.
You did have an Episcopal church in Madison. Did you all know that? I've been searching the historical, the roots of nativity in Huntsville, and I find a reference to Madison Station and a lot associated with it, and it gives a description of it. I'm going to give that to our friends back there. All I'm saying is that I do believe that recognizing the historical roots of your community is a very vital way to bring value system into focus and to preserve that which should be preserved, even though the opposite pole of that is to make a whole lot of money on something. And I strongly hold out for historical value as being equally as important as a bank, a big bankroll. And I'll be glad to answer any questions if you will.
Yeah.
Yes.
Backing up a little bit, at the point in time we are right now, you said that Our next step would be to get in touch with each property owner in this district that mm-hmm. we've established and have them to sign a petition, and have to be like...
Yeah, it's an individual petition. I don't seem to have brought one tonight, but I'll get you one mm-hmm. of the nature of it. Yeah. It directs the city of Madison to create the district, okay, and it's signed by a property owner.
Okay, and then you mentioned an alternate. What was that one again?
The alternate is to just declare an election day and have people come and vote. But the other petition is a more, in the petition idea, you get to explain it and discuss it with the, and let them think about it. But once they saw the value of this, then we got... a very high degree of participation. Your estates are hard to vote, you know, but otherwise we were able to get property owners to